What is energy? There are two usual explanations of energy. Wondrous as they are, we offer a third, and in fact a deeper one. The standard explanations are, energy comes in many forms and is conserved. The energy of a system is its capacity to do work. The deeper explanation of energy has lain hidden in a book by a wise and modest sage, the Hungarian mathematician Cornelius Lanczos. The book, written in 1949, had the title The Variational Principles of Mechanics and attracted little attention. It was admired for the wisdom it contained on the principle of least action, but Lanczos's great insights into energy seemed to have slipped by unnoticed. It's all going to sound rather philosophical. Now, when something new is defined in physics, there is always a duality. The new must be defined in terms of something else, like word definitions in a dictionary. Sometimes two new quantities are defined together, as in Newton's force and mass. What is the duality when it comes to energy? Examining the two usual definitions of energy, we see that they both concern a system. The total energy of a system is conserved, and the energy of a system is its capacity to do work. It is no accident that in the third explanation of energy, the system, again, is paramount. What is a system in physics? A system can have any ingredients, space, time, masses, velocities, electric charges, light, and so on. But the crucial thing is that it has boundaries. We know what is in the system, and we know where the outside begins. The system is crucial to the definition of energy because some of the manifestations of energy are whole system attributes, like the family rather than cousin Jack. Also, to return to our earlier question, the duality inherent in the definition of energy relates to the duality what is and what is not in the given system. Now, in Lanczos's explanation of energy, we have a given system, and it is made up of components. Then, all the different kinds of energy that we could ever imagine come down to just two categories, the energies of the individual components and the energies of the interaction between these components. That's it. This is more general than the familiar split into kinetic energy and potential energy. The individual energy is not just kinetic energy. It is the energy proper to itself. That is to say, the energy it would have if it were all alone in the universe. Its kinetic energy, yes, but also its mass and any internal energy it may have. As regards interaction energy, this is not just the energy due to a certain configuration of parts in space, but the energy due to configuration of parts in time and the speeds and directions of moving parts. The interaction energy is an energy structure, or maybe even a superstructure, made up of a subset of interacting parts, like electrons going around the nucleus, the solar system, an electrical circuit, a flowing stream, a mechanical device, an electrolytic cell, a Roman arch, and so on. This subdivision of the system into components and structures made from components presents us straight away with a problem. Might there not be a risk of double accounting of energy? Yes, there is this risk, because it is not possible to make a clean, once and for all subdivision of the system into structures and parts. Rather, there is a constant overlapping and interplay between these categories. For example, particles are given their marching orders by the interaction energies, but then these very particles therefore adopt new positions and new motions, and so the interaction energy changes. individual electrical charges may be attracted to an electrode, but then they accumulate there and so lessen the attraction for subsequent charges. An analogy might be waves on the beach. The waves cause a pattern of little ridges to form in the sand, but then these ridges affect the motion of subsequent waves, and so on. As another example, a planet moves because the space-time where it finds itself is curved, contains energy. But the planet, by its mass, slightly distorts its local space-time. We are saved from disaster, saved from the energy bootstrapping itself to infinity, or diminishing itself to zero, by a wondrous principle in physics, a universal principle that gallops into the rescue. This is the principle of least action. It postulates that the individual components respond in exactly such a way as to instantaneously counterbalance the marching orders issued by the energy structures, and vice versa. The word counterbalance covers a multitude of mathematics, but we can jump over this. Lunchos was a genius at getting to the heart of the physics. He noted that this counterbalancing feat was reminiscent of Newton's law of action and reaction, but with some crucial extensions. In Newton, a mass reacts against a stimulus by accelerating, whereas now, in the principle of least action, a component reacts by changing its energy, for example, its kinetic energy. Also, whereas by Newton each mass responds individually to the force on it, now we have a new possibility. The individual components rally together. They cooperate in order to react against the attack. An analogy comes from football. The individual players do not try and take sole possession of the ball and then head straight to do a goal kick. Rather, together they adopt a defense position, which may even entail a player running directly away from the goal. Newton carried out what may be the single most impressive calculation ever done in physics, calculating the orbit of the moon, to see if it obeyed the same laws as an apple falling on Earth. He said humbly that it answered pretty nearly. In order to do this calculation, Newton had to mentally subdivide the mass of the whole Earth into tiny volume elements, and then calculate their individual effect on the moon one by one, and then add these effects together. We have been so impressed by the outstanding success of Newton's reductive approach that we can hardly credit that it doesn't always answer to the needs of the given problem. Another example occurs in the social sciences. A British politician once famously remarked that there is no such thing as society. In other words, that we all act as individuals. However, economists such as Adam Smith stress that societal structures do exist and do modify individual behavior. Back to physics. The principle of least action asserts that the total reaction must balance the total action. But it is not essential to have Newton's third law upheld on a particle-by-particle basis. For example, consider the case of an electromagnetic wave. The listener may know that this is made up of an oscillating electrical energy and an oscillating magnetic energy, always at right angles to each other. Each generates the other, depending on their speed. But what if they get out of step? In order to make sure that they don't either generate each other to infinity or peter out to nothing, they must each travel at exactly the same speed, and exactly the right speed, the speed of light, of course. Note that, as we have said nothing about reference frames in this explanation, then they are irrelevant, and so the speed of light must be a universal constant. Another example of the principle of least action comes in the arena of gravitation. We have already mentioned the case of the orbiting planet, and listeners may be familiar with the analogy of a trampoline whose fabric is stretched by a heavy mass. What is less well known is that, even in everyday mechanics, it is also a question of individual components responding to the curvature of space. This space is now an abstract mathematical space, instead of the actual four-dimensional space known as space-time. But the approach is exactly the same. As a bead is moved along a twisted wire, then different amounts of energy will have to be expended for the same increment of distance moved along the wire, depending on the curviness. Also, imagine that we're on a merry-go-round, but it's so foggy that we can't see that it's turning. Marbles on the deck start to roll and have curved trajectories, and as we walk from the center to the edge, we feel an invisible sideways push. If we walk faster, the sideways push is stronger. We may also feel a bit seasick. Space is curved and can make small masses change their energy and make other non-Newtonian things happen. Energy is implicated in this curvature. Energy is required to flex a wire and to make a merry-go-round spin. Consider applying a force to a beam. Instead of moving as one body, the beam may flex, twist, or shear. In order to model this, we may have to consider the distribution of energy density at every point throughout the material. In other words, we find that the beam is more than just the sum of its elemental Newtonian parts. Therefore, the principle of least action, the energy approach, is vital in engineering and not just in cosmology and quantum mechanics. So what then is energy? Answer: it is the individual component energies and the whole structure energies that occur in the principle of least action. Scalar structure function is not a pithy monosyllabic descriptor like force, and not so intuitive as a spear or an arrow, but it can't be helped. Nature is as difficult as she needs to be. And if ever there was discovered a theory of everything that could be written as one long equation on a t-shirt, then you can be sure that every symbol in that equation would need a whole shelf full of textbooks to explain it. Of course, in those special cases where forces do answer the problem, then we'd be mad to use anything more complicated. It seems especially counterintuitive that motion involves direction, whereas the energy functions are always scalars, having no direction. But this seeming lacuna in the program is resolved when we remember that directions are specified within the system. An apple falls down to the ground. The bead follows the twists and turns of the wire. Protons approach each other in a collision, and so on. Finally, why is this third explanation of energy more profound than the other two? The definition that energy comes in many forms but is always conserved doesn't explain how and why the energy comes in those forms, and how and why it changes between those forms. The principle of least action does explain this, and moreover, energy isn't always conserved. This is only true in a closed system, and some other things in physics have a conservation property. As regards the definition, the energy of a system is its capacity to do work, setting aside the curiously anthropic tinge of work, this definition doesn't explain anything about energy before it gets converted into work, a period of time that could last for millennia. The principle of least action fills in this gap. For example, it predicts that in cases where nothing is moving, then the potential energy is at a minimum. What if the energy is locked away forever? I must admit I had to think for a bit before I came up with an example. Supposing the universe has died a heat death at, say, 2.73 Kelvin, then there is still energy in the system, but no work can be done. For different universes of different masses, and dying at different temperatures, then the amounts of energy will be different in each case, but still no work can be done. So, in summary, Lanczos explains that energy just is those very scalar functions that occur in the principle of least action, and that guarantee certain things, that energy is conserved in a closed system, that certain particles exist, and move, and work gets done. But the system does the least it can get away with, and takes the most time over it. In Alice in Wonderland, Alice tries to look through a window into a beautiful garden. We do need maths to explore this garden in detail, but perhaps we can peep through the window and glimpse the exquisite beauty of the place we all live in.